You're listening to From Illumination to Innovation, a revealing and provocative exploration of the rapidly shifting landscape of values, purpose, leadership, and culture, both corporate and social. I'm your host, Stephanie Crane.
And I'm your host, Shaniqua Brown. We're excited to have you join us as we shine a light on new perspectives, amplify voices of influence, and elevate bright ideas that will expand your idea of what's possible in business and beyond. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to From Illumination to Innovation. I'm one of your co-hosts, Shaniqua Brown, and today's discussion is going to be about harnessing core values, the activation talk. Stephanie, why don't you take it from here?
Thank you, Shaniqua. I am Stephanie Crane, also the corporate mystic, and my company is Tapas Innovation. And I am very excited, we are very excited to have a guest today, Margot Wickersham. And Shaniqua and I met her, we were apparently wearing matching outfits, which made us easy to identify, but we met Margot at Austin Startup Week, and both of us had, I think, independent, separate, and fascinating conversations with Margot. So we agreed immediately we wanted her on our show. So Margot, welcome, and tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I think one of the things that was interesting about Austin Startup Week is the rich tapestry of people, backgrounds, talents, and also phases of life. Like, you have a sense about startups are 27-year-old males, right? Mm-hmm. And there were some of those. But there was just this wide variety, lots of women. There were people of all ages. And I love that. So I felt like that was a far more interesting and diverse experience than I was expecting. And that led to a lot of great conversations.
Yeah, I felt that way too, honestly. It was a great event. And I think that Capital Factory kind of does engender that diversity in a lot of ways. Like,
they're good at the curating.
They really are good at the curating.
Really good at that, because it went far beyond just meeting people and the connection, you know, just falling off. But here we are today. We were able to foster that connection, so we're super excited.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so I am focused on the health insurance space, which sounds super boring, but is really important, and it feels good to be part of a solution. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this for about 5 years with Clearwater, and before that, my background is in marketing and sales, technology, did a stint at Dell. I have been a remodeling contractor, and more recently, I wrote a book. And which is available on Amazon.
What's it called?
Kindle or hardback. No, not hardback, softback. It's Gratitude in the Storm: When Not Dying is Enough to Keep Fighting.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That sounds powerful. That's and we will beautiful. Definitely have to get that on our book list immediately. Like,
it's a quick read, and it is, as an eternal optimist, I was brought to my knees with my battle with cancer in 2020 during quarantine. Mm-hmm. So no one could come to the hospital with me, and I was in there for days and nights on end. It was really depressing and really upsetting, and the cancer was life-threatening. So that was a lot. Yeah. And then life kept delivering blows, and I really got to the point where really I just don't, like, I can get up a lot of times, but I really can't get up one more time. And I feel like most of us can relate to that, and how I realize that you don't need to feel empowered and strong to keep going. You just need to lay there and not die. And that's what I thought, well, I could do that. I can quantify and say laying there and not dying is something I can handle today. Anyway, it's meant to be inspiring, funny, make you cry, make you laugh.
Yeah, well, and it's also, honestly, like when we think about how reactive we often feel like we have to be. And then there's something about recognizing that stillness is what will heal you. And I think, and I'm gonna use this as possibly an awkward segue into our topic. Perhaps during that time period, you had some time to evaluate your own personal values and and what was really important to you during those moments. I'm wondering if you could maybe, we could start this conversation with that.
100%. And I would say that's not an awkward segue, because in fact, that's how I got through the next few moments at that moment in time, and then later through days and and so on. And that was what's most important to me. And for me, it's the love of the people in my life, my family. I have now grown kids, and they lost their father when they were in middle school, and it was horrible. It was horrible. He drank himself to death, so it was a terrible thing for them to experience, for all of us. And I thought, I can't leave them. I need to be, I can't put them through that. Yeah. So I've got to be here for them. So it was just out of a sense of love and duty and relationship to my kids and my husband. And then eventually I've broadened that circle out to include the friends and other people. So love and relationships is what it was all about. And that's how I got through it.
How did you how did you define your core values, and how did you activate them while you were in the hospital? You know, like, how did that happen?
I think that the answer to that is I wasn't aware that's what I was doing. But I was aware of what felt. I was using my intuition, I think, more than my business hat of what are my goals and what are my missions, right?
Sure.
And I just felt in my core that this is what I've got to do. It's the relationships with people. I thought about what you hear everyone says on their deathbed. No one says, oh, I wish I'd achieved more. I wish I'd worked more. They always say it's about the love. It's about the relationships. And I'm a driven, ambitious girl. I like achieving. That's really fun for me. I'm goal-oriented, but I'm also super relationship-oriented. So that push and pull, I think it helps keep me balanced. And because I was in the throes of fighting for my life, I think it was easier for me, because I was facing death, to have that sort of deathbed clarity of what is important.
You know,
that makes sense?
It makes perfect sense, and it reminds me, honestly, of Steve Jobs and his story. And, you know, he was notoriously a very driven or authoritative, demanding leader, went out of bounds in the way that he led his organization, led him to great heights, great successes, and then he developed pancreatic cancer and did everything in his power and used all the money that he had and was not able to overcome that. And in the end, really echoed exactly what you said, you know, that all of this other stuff didn't matter. It didn't matter. And so that kind of leads me into this question of organizational values, really, you know, because when we've been kind of brought up in a corporate system where in the organizations themselves, you know, the only thing that matters is the bottom line. The only thing that matters is what the board needs. The only thing that matters is, you know, this, this, and that, and not the people in it. Not the person who is going through a great life crisis, who's rediscovering their own personal values.
Right.
And when we hear from, I think, you know, people like Steve Jobs, who we've sort of all kind of put up there on a pedestal of an iconic leader, an iconic corporate leader. But at the end, when it really mattered, the things that were most important were not his greatest successes.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that points to is we maybe are more in touch with our core values during stress or during when we're really fighting. And so I'm thinking, you know, what is it about going through a shared difficulty, hardship, emergencies that bonds people together, that you have that clarity of values, which is, you know, let's help each other. That's what we do. But then when we step back and we get wrapped up in every quarter makes a difference, my value is to the shareholder, and that makes it really hard to stay focused on, well, where's the warm fuzzy? Where's the part that feels like I'm a human being interacting with human beings? And especially in the business sense of things. So I feel like then you add on top of that, if you're in the world I'm in with health insurance, you've got a lot of, what you have about to be only four large insurance companies rather than five, because Humana and Cigna are about to reduce the number of large companies out there. I know.
So but that just makes my head hurt.
I know. Okay, like, it's not activating my core values for sure.
No, but go on.
But in that space, and we look at how a company like Humana's stock price has gone up 3,000% since the ACA launched. And you know that 2/3 of bankruptcies are from medical bills. and yeah. most of those people had insurance, then this is not a scenario that feels good to anybody. Mm-hmm. And when we look at what role do employers have in directing health insurance and plans and all of that, you could argue why we have that you know set up. I don't know why we do, but we do. That's where we are now.
You know, it's interesting. You're bringing up something that's literally very personal for me right now. I just had a family experience where one of our younger family members avoided going to the hospital. They have a great job. They have great insurance, and they almost died. Because they have been conditioned that the cost is too much. They can't lose time on work. They can't be missing. If they miss, they're going to lose their important job. And really, honestly, like, it came down to hours. And they're still recovering right now. And it was so upsetting to me. Like, I could not wrap my... I was just like, God, if you die, you can't... like blow those bills off. If you live, you can choose to blow your bills off or set up a payment plan or pay them again. But if you die, that choice is gone. And the fact that somebody would sort of put that value system in place out of conditioning, it was really upsetting to me.
I can see how it would be. And you're right, that is out of conditioning. And it's difficult in the employer-employee relationship because we know that we have to respect the employer. They're who, as I say to my kids, if they can give you a good or bad grade, if they can hire or fire you, then you need to pay attention to what they're doing and what they're asking you to do. But therein lies a lot of gray area. And I think that is where the gray area is where we lose our sense of mission and purpose. And we wander off the reservation like your family member did where... like if she or he stood back and looked at that, you would think, well, that's insane. Why did I wait so long? Nothing gets better health-wise with time.
Right.
Oh, no.
You know, I like to say, if you see something, feel something, see something, hear something, anything, go right away.
We live in Austin, which we have a lot of entrepreneurs and tech startups and, you know, going to hear a pitch, everyone wants to change the world.
Right.
And then you think about, well, what kind of benefits are you giving your employees? What kind of lives are your employees living? You know, you had a wonderful job, good paying job, a great benefits, but was in fear to use their benefits, you know, because of maybe the cost or fear that it required that they would take more time off. So how can we really say we're changing the world if we're not even valuing our employees that are helping us achieve that goal?
And one thing this summer we had in Texas, anybody who was around Texas this summer and is still alive and didn't fry to death, raise your hand and pat yourself on the back. But in Texas this summer, you know, we had many, many, you know, months almost of days, 105 plus. It reached up to 115 degrees. So I saw it reported on the news that men specifically between this summer we had more emergency ER visits and heat-related deaths with men between the ages of 35 and 55 because they were just pushing through. Most of them were working in the heat. And they were just pushing through because of, again, conditioning. Like that we have been so conditioned to devalue our own health for the greater good of the job. Right. And again, it's like looking at the purpose of the job that you're working for. Is it worth your life?
Right.
It might be. I mean, there are some jobs that people give their lives for, and there's a value system in place there.
Right.
But is every, like, average corporate office cubicle job?
Or construction labor job.
Construction labor job or any blue job. You know, to the degree that the employer holds that much power over the individual. I think, you know, what you were talking about earlier, it's like, yeah, they can give you the grade. They have this. But it's like they really control your actual health, you know, your actual well-being in many, many ways. And I think that system is out of balance in that way.
I think that's a really good point. And you're also underscoring that men are conditioned just socially, at least in Western culture, to be stoic.
Yes.
And that's a whole nother 55 or two or so topics. So there's a whole lot of topics there. But I'm recalling a study I I read about when I was working for an ad agency that was focused on emerging technologies in the pharmaceutical space. And so this was a sunscreen. This is going back 20 years. Mm-hmm. And men get skin cancer more often than women because, and they die from it more often, because they wait. They feel like asking or letting somebody help them is a sign of weakness. Now, it's not really each individual's problem or they're not the cause of that. That's the conditioning that you're talking about. Sure. And I guess where we have agency individually is choosing to have awareness of the conditioning and then choosing what we want to do about that. And I think a lot of employers do not intend for their workers to choose to be unhealthy over taking care of themselves. So it's part of that. We have to understand our own boundaries physically, mentally, emotionally, so that we can expect others to and enforce it.
Well, you know, workaholism and overworking is a trauma response, right? Like it's really been like linked back to, you know, people who are going to work like 60 and 70 hours a week and really just is they're avoiding emotional, they're really not processing emotions. And in our corporate society and the way that we've, so you might care greatly about your employees, but you are a workaholic and you're the leader of that company. Leadership drives culture.
Right.
Culture is going to drive your brand, right? And if you are a workaholic, well, you're going to set that culture of workaholism right out of the gate because who's not going to do what the boss does, right? The boss is, and if you're a boss who takes care of yourself, if you're a boss who sets boundaries and structures time, delegates properly, creates trust, well, you're going to create that culture as well. You know, I mean, like the opportunity is there, but I think a lot of times we have people that are in leadership that, you know, really haven't had the ability or the capacity to recognize how much of their own trauma they're projecting into their environment. And then we get toxic companies. Yeah, I say all the time, like nobody ever wakes up and says, God, I want to start a toxic company today.
So much.
So much. Like, this is my dream.
My lifelong goal. Right. It's on my heart.
I can think of like six guys, okay, but we're not going to talk about them today, okay? But
let's talk about six.
Oh my God. No, I think you're so right. And it's back to the lack of awareness. I think a lot of leaders have, most people, I think, have good intentions, mostly. And let's say that most leaders have good intentions, mostly. It's a lack of awareness. They don't realize that they're having a trauma response and working long hours or what have you. They don't realize they are setting the stage.
They've been told it was good.
I come from a workaholic family.
Absolutely, me too.
I used to say that working hard was our love language.
You know. It was. Pain is weakness leaving the body.
It sounds like... for the most part, we haven't activated our individual core values to then have collective core values.
I think you're right about that. And that is part of maybe, I hope, there's a bit of an awakening happening in Western culture, I think. Mm-hmm. And it is, and maybe part of the baby step is, I do something that matters, I'm going to help change the world. And I think what's starting to occur, what I'm seeing is that there's an awareness of, I've got to put the mask on me first. Yes. If I don't take care of me, and this is a mom and a dad thing too. Okay. And I remember thinking there aren't enough hours in the day. My kids are little. My husband at the time was traveling. And it wasn't a weakness to ask. I had a friend. I had touchstone friends who said, no, it's not a weakness to ask for help. You need to run away every now and then. You can't do it all alone. But I thought I was expected to. That's the conditioning that I got.
Absolutely.
And I was able to because I had friends that I could listen to. Access my own agency and make my own determination about what are those boundaries, how do I take care of myself. And then I learned, and what's even greater about this is I'm showing my kids or employees, choose either one, how to take care of yourself, and that is the model to copy.
Yes.
Very much so. So what's happening right now? What do we think is happening right now in business today? I think we're in a big transitional shift. Mm-hmm. Things are, I mean, like it's like earth shifting at that level. But what is the shift? Like, what's your perspective on that?
That's a really interesting question. And that could be probably several podcasts. There's a lot to go and untease from that. I feel like there is this awareness. I feel like we've gotten to kind of a flexion point. There is a point where the pain is great enough that you're willing to look at other options, mm-hmm. which is where I was when I was willing to say, okay, I could die. What can I do to not die today?
Right.
But we don't we won't go through the discomfort and the learning and the gaining awareness if we aren't forced to, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of what's happening is it's forcing people to look at things that they haven't before. And hustle culture, everybody's kind of going, I don't know if that's the right way to do it or not. That doesn't feel healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I am seeing, especially now that I have 20-something-year-old, and they don't want that part of it. They don't want to just worship hustle culture.
What do you say to the business leader who says that they're just being lazy?
Yeah, that's, well, you have to look at, if you don't feel, sense, understand that it is not lazy, that it is healthy, and that mm-hmm. you get higher productivity out of mm-hmm. people. If you don't understand that, then just look at the science.
Yeah.
And the science says that there is a point of diminishing returns, mm-hmm. and that's what hustle culture is about, is going past when you have diminishing returns, because you get a badge of honor, mm-hmm. you get more pats on the back, right?
This goes back to why hustle culture, the overwork, is really a trauma response. Because you're really trying to get these needs met that
right.
weren't met at a very early point in your life.
Right.
And you were conditioned that this is a way to get it met.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
As a social scientist, I would say that looking at it from a different perspective, we've tried it. You know, people have tried the hustle culture, so, and it just hasn't worked.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of saying they're lazy, we can see that they have tried it.
Right.
Maybe let's go back to the drawing board to see if there's other solutions that we could figure out together.
That's a great point.
Yes.
I can say within my own family, my son looked at my father, his grandfather, who he didn't know that well. My father was not a very aware person.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man who had a job for 40 years that he hated. And both of my kids said, I don't want to be your dad, mm-hmm. who also didn't have a relationship with his children.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw firsthand, it was in their face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you get an example of what not to be, that really helps clarify what you do want to be.
Right.
Sometimes it's knowing what is not the path,
uh-huh.
right? As much as, well, if that's not the path, I know to just avoid that altogether. Sometimes
uh-huh.
that is just the information you need to keep going.
Hmm. So, I'm curious, if we talk about activating individual values, but when we talk about corporate values, I mean, a lot of times when we think about corporate values, it seems very crafted and curated,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we've worked with our brand manager to put together this wonderful list.
Here are these
know,
five things.
There's these, like, very important things that we... And
they're search engine optimized.
Exactly. and so, from that perspective, you know, I mean, okay, it's great. It's great to have defined values as a business, but how does it become more than just words on paper?
Mm-hmm.
How are values harnessed, as we say, harnessed and then truly activated throughout the organizational ecosystem?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my core belief is this starts with leadership. It has to,
yeah.
but what if it doesn't? Like what does the middle manager of an organization do when they're sort of caught in that rock in a hard place? How can they impact culture and really start to express values? Like, I feel like, you know, when we talk about looking at things from a different perspective, it's like
right.
if we can't get the leaders to open their eyes and to have that awareness and get past that just initial stage fright,
right.
you know, how can we work with different levels of the organization to really empower people?
That's a great question, because most of us aren't working for the top, you know, C-suite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can't do anything about whatever is or isn't that culture.
Right.
So what can you do? It comes back to what can you control in your environment?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that let's take a middle manager, for example. You can control your immediate day, the actions that you take, the priorities that you show people are your priorities by the actions that you take. And
mm-hmm.
so encouraging others and complimenting them on doing things that are within the core values.
Mm-hmm.
When they show that they are taking agency for their own, what makes them them,
yes.
and also recognize when they're staying true to themselves while also accessing the values that the company wants them to
mm-hmm.
have, I think when those two things align, it's just like anything else. Why not just positively reinforce the good
uh-huh.
and maybe don't mention the bad unless you really need to. Others are getting hurt or you see somebody else getting hurt.
it doesn't, you know, as an I've been a high level executive, but worked my way up through the ranks doing that. And one of the things that I always just, you know, and kind of a take it for granted, or just this is the way things, I expected those values to be real. Like, right. So I really demanded accountability around those values, you know, and I would go, I would walk in, you know, hierarchy be damned. I would go to the president and be like, explain this to me. Well, and he'd be like, who are you?
Well, that's how employees like look for their jobs. That's how they assess whether or not this is going to be a fit for them. Right. So I think you have every right to, you know, hold the company accountable for the core values that they advertise. So I think that's 100% fair. And, you know, Margo, when you shared earlier that in middle management, like how can they help, you know, essentially shield, you know, the individual contributors from everything else by having their own core values? I've had that experience with the manager that lived the company's core values, and our team hired based on the company's core values. And when we were, you know, questioned by other teams, you know, the manager shielded us from those conversations and was able to stand on the core values. So when their peers or their skip lead went to the leadership, what leg could they stand on? Because they are operating in the organization's core values. So
even if other parts of the company are not, I mean, it is, what is our personal responsibility? What can we do? What can we impact? Right. And when you're a leader of any level, you are impacting by example and encouraging people. I think who doesn't like to feel encouraged and like they're, the people they work for are pleased with the work.
Right. I also often coach people to learn how to manage up.
Right.
If your leader doesn't have the emotional skills to truly lead, right, and if they are just being a micromanager, or if they're very, very focused on details because they don't really understand the bigger picture, that's an opportunity. You know, I think a lot of people in the corporate space, they kind of default to victim mode a little bit because their paychecks are kind of being held at risk, you know?
Yeah,
and,
that's
and
a
so
good point.
It's really easy to, like, kind of fall into that spot of, like, oh, you know, I'm stuck. My experience has always been, like, the minute that you think that if I do something, I'm going to get fired, then you should already assume you're fired or that you've quit that job because it is simply a matter of time. Because if you've already got that, if you've got that like heart set fear in yourself, it's just going to be a matter of time before it happens. It's just a matter of whether or not you control it or somebody else controls it, you know? And from my perspective, I know that I'm not the norm. I have never had a job when I left a job because I always left jobs on value-based reasons. When it was not a mutually serving situation and I was not going to be able to grow in that space, or worse, it was causing me harm, there's a cost to that. There's a cost to that. And for me, it was always very easy for me to say, I value myself more. But I think we have a society that really doesn't condition towards that.
Yeah, I think you're so right. I think we have a society that conditions the opposite. You know, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, is you're sort of beholden to what your supervisor or your parents, you know, are telling you you need to do, and having agency over that. I see more of that with younger generations, and I think that's a good thing to be able to question respectfully, but to call them on it, you know, and to be able to say, I am so aware what my core values are that when I'm not in alignment, I have to leave, is amazing, and the exception. As you know, you're the exception. And I think that it speaks to how tied we are to our work environments. Yes, 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 we all know that we spend more time with the work people than we do with our families. More than that, we do have some, I guess, responsibility to not only ourselves, but to our team and then to our supervisors to hold them accountable and just say, look, you know, one of the core values here is that you care about your people. And I feel like you are not showing me that you care about your people when you expect me to work long hours and to skip going to the doctor, coming back to your family member. If that leader outright expected that kind of work ethic, and for them to expect to not take care of themselves, that is heinous.
Yeah, and I don't even think that they did. Honestly, I don't at all.
Right.
I really believe that that was just the conditioning
exactly.
of what we yeah. all kind of assume.
So
you
just
know?
Being aware that that is the conditioning that's out there, and then we can choose what to do about it. It's sort of like you can't change the way you were raised. But you get to a point where you go, okay, well, that's the hand I was dealt.
You get to change
right.
the way
you, now?
You get to change the way you move forward.
You do.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
we have full control over.
And it makes sense. So go with me here.
Yeah.
I love history and, you know, combining disciplines to like seek answers. But it sounds like we're all for like the majority of us are conditioned into like working hard. But when we think about like history, there was a monarch that, you know, came here and then we have America, and there's the 1% that doesn't, you know, work in that sense of time. And for the most part, the majority of us worked, and we worked with our head down. You just had, I guess it wasn't until like the early 1900s where there was an 8-hour work day mm-hmm. versus a 16-hour work day. So we, no wonder we've been conditioned to overwork ourselves for an exchange of money, whether it was free labor, but we were forced to do it, to, you know, some corporate jobs pay six figures. But there's always been an exchange for overworking ourselves.
That's a really good point. And it's intrinsic. It's in our
generational trauma.
Cultural DNA. Yes, yeah, it is. And if you think about the stories that the people who came here, you know, your ancestors, these are traumatic stories, mm-hmm. regardless of how you look at it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like mine were trying to escape, well, they were going to kill them because they were Protestants, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And so then it was like all of that hard work just got reinforced. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you're right, generational trauma.
I think
we can choose to break, though.
You know,
we are
doing it. And part of what you're describing is a need for survival. Mm-hmm. So when you're, you know, escaping, you know, being killed, or, you know, when you're pulling your, you know, entire culture out of enslavement, mm-hmm. or any, this is survival. You know, and mm-hmm. the conditioning that comes with survival doesn't leave us easily. Mm-hmm. You know, it's our ego is like, oh, this keeps me alive. I must keep doing
right.
it. I must keep doing it. You know, even, and so I think, you know, as we've moved into, you know, again, this corporate space where, you know, we're not having to like literally grow and create, or I mean, we could and we probably should be more involved with growing and creating our own foods and things like that. But we do have a lot of conveniences, yet we're still in survival mode.
God, that's a great point.
You know, and I feel that is really holding us back. When we talk about how we express values, organizations know that if they hold us in survival mode, they can control us more.
That is making me think of something really interesting. So the agents of change can sometimes be because within the culture,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they come from legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at my peers at work today where the men get paternity leave. Oh my gosh, that is amazing.
Right.
I don't think, woe is me, my husband didn't get to do that because 25 years ago we didn't have it. I think, look at the gains.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree with that.
So there are so many places where either it's coming from one source or another, but we are embracing change and balance into life. What did I read? There was a woman who, it was a woman I had talked to at Austin Startup Week. She knows of a woman who just got the same amount of maternity leave at the company that her husband was going to get. And she's the one with the baby. She's growing, you know. So, but these things are evolving. I mean, uh-huh. for there to even be, there it was definitely squat in the field, have the baby, keep pulling. You
yeah.
know, that's the way it was. And women are so strong that we would just be like, all right, I guess that's what we got to do. And now we got 2 mouths to feed, you know. So I think that it's interesting. Sometimes the growth comes from within because of magnanimous and wonderful cultural values that leadership embrace. And sometimes it comes from outside of the organization as a standard. And these like the legislation and these changes raise the standard, and then that becomes the norm, and then you're a bad employer if you don't embrace that new standard.
That's true.
So you talked about the long work days, also children, you know, 8-year-olds working in factories where they locked the doors, you know, and they worked all day. So things are improving all the time, I feel like, and sometimes it's against maybe the norm, maybe it's like, you know, okay, you're making me kicking and screaming as a leader, embrace some of these new ways to show that I care for my employees, but I'm doing it, and now that becomes the new set point, and then that shows people around you.
So tell me, Margot, why should businesses even care about harnessing and activating values? Like, what? Why does it matter?
Right. It matters because it affects the bottom line. So that's why if you are a business person and it is all about the profit, you need to care even if you don't care. Because churn is very expensive. So hiring, training, and losing people is very expensive. And churn is what happens when you don't have a good culture, when you say you have values that you don't live, when you have toxic expectations, when you don't take care of your people. So having the understanding that having values, benefits, everything that's going to help attract the right candidates to start with, but also keep them, is key to your bottom line.
And I, you know, Shaniqua and I think we maybe mentioned this in a previous show, but LinkedIn came out with a survey recently that 87% of Gen Z would leave a job to go to another job that had values that were more aligned with theirs. So when you're talking about churn, that's only going to get more churny.
The churn factor is going up.
It's only going up.
I think that's partly the shift we're talking about, which is how much am I willing to tolerate as an employee for the values to not sync with mine, to feel undervalued. Nobody likes to feel undervalued. And we all want to feel like we matter. Even if we don't, we'd like to, even if we know that this is not even a really caring thing, we want to feel like it does matter. So it matters a lot that employers look at what's important and then be there. And it's not the snacks.
It's not snacks and ping pong tables, y'all.
It's,
well, I think that gets into that like kind of cultivated culture. You know, if you really are truly authentically expressing your values, that culture is going to happen organically and in a really beautiful way. When you're, you know, when you have
to force it.
Well, you're forcing it because really what you're trying to do is hide things in that sense. You're trying to cover up the brand shadow, if you will, and like the things that the brand really isn't valuing. And so you put all of these shiny objects in place to as distractions. And distractions, you know, we are a distracted society. So distractions really are losing even their impact anymore. It's like, I'm sorry, how many times can you distract me in a second with 70,000 pieces of information? You know, it's like those distractions just simply don't work anymore. You know, we have conveniences. We can go play ping pong. We can go get soda. You know, it's
You could play it on your phone.
Exactly.
You know, if you want, and you can have the snack delivered. So,
Or you could be at your home comfortably working from home and like
eating
drinking your
snack
favorite
plate.
Tea. Yeah, exactly. So,
not having to sit in rush hour traffic. That sounds wonderful. You know, for some people.
Right.
I'm sorry, not having to be in an environment where anybody is willing to microwave tuna fish. No, I'm sorry. Thank you. This is right here. We should know. I'm
sorry. I feel like that should be in everybody's culture that you don't do that.
It's a value system, okay?
It's a value system.
Oh my God, ladies, this has been great. I just want to end like for me, values are where everything starts. And I think they're where everything ends. You know, if you don't understand your own personal values, if you don't recognize the enormity of negotiation that goes on with your values, because everywhere you go, you are negotiating values, and that's okay. Values are things that I think are negotiable. What you value when you're 20 is different than what you value when you're 40 is different than what you value when you're 60. And it's you should be constantly kind of checking in with yourself. But as organizations, those values need to have more weight. Those values need to have more permanence, and they need to really, truly carry through in action. They really, really do. I believe that deeply.
It's a really good point, because what you're talking about is basically don't listen to what I say. Pay attention to what I do. And that's how values are truly activated, is it's what are your actions? Mm-hmm. And if those are backed up, and whatever your actions are, those are actually your values. So you might want to start with what you're doing.
That's exactly
and work
truth.
Backwards. But you're talking about also how values can be fluid, and there's times when you can push some forward and some aside. And that's true in a work environment, too. There are times when maybe you are putting in longer hours because there's a deadline and something's really important and everybody pulls together and mm-hmm. we don't mind doing it sometimes. We don't want that to be
the
what's
norm.
Expected as the norm, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like we're in a place where we've been distracted so much and constantly working ourselves over and over, and it just seems like we need to rest and discover and define our core values individually and trust ourselves to know that we are aligned with what we need to be and do, and then lead in love, because everyone's just doing their best. And if we can individually, you know, work through ourselves and define what resonates with us, it'll be a lot easier for us to navigate the world.
I think that is such a great point. What you're talking about is really it's personal responsibility for mm-hmm. our own core values, is what I hear you saying. Mm-hmm. We can't change what goes on in the company, and certainly not at the leadership, unless we're sitting at the table and be able to just say, well, I'm going to be in tune with myself, mm-hmm. and that's really important. That's not an indulgence. Mm-hmm. That's respect for me and the rest of the people that I encounter every day.
Ladies, I think that is the point that we're going to end on. Mm-hmm. We lead in love. And Margo, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
My absolute delight. Have me back anytime. Y'all are so fun.
Thank you, Margo.
And interesting.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And like us, follow us, share us, do all the cool things, okay? Make us go wild, okay?
Thanks for listening to our show. Show us your support by following us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
You can also find us on Castus at fromelimination2innovation.castus.com. If you love our show, share it with your friends and coworkers too. Let's all work together to help businesses vibrate higher.